like it. After we finish, we will convene up on the deck for coffee and to discuss what we've learned about each other today. He slithers back down into his seat. Any questions? I look around and a few hands are raised. Do we get overalls? Joshua says something under his breath that sounds like, fucking morons. I'll field this one. You'll each get a protective suit and a helmet to protect your eyes and face. I feel Joshua's sigh at my hip sink through my t-shirt. Yes, I point, and Andy lowers his hand. How much do paintballs hurt? A lot, Joshua says from his seat. Remember, folks, the aim isn't to hurt each other. I glance down at Joshua. No matter how bad you want to. Are you two on opposing sides? Someone at the back calls, causing laughter. Our reputation for hatred has gotten a little out of hand, and most of it is my fault. I have to quit with the hating Joshua jokes. This is designed to bring us all together. We'll all be on each other's team at some point, like in a work situation. Even Joshua and I will find some common ground today. Anyway, the grand prize. Everyone sits up straight. The prize, Joshua interrupts loudly from his seat, is an extra leave day credited to you. That's right, a free day off. But you have to earn it, displaying outstanding commitment to your team. There's a buzz among the group. A free day off? A day release from jail? It dangles above them all like a brass ring. Paintball Shootout is located in a small pine plantation. The ground is dusty and stark. The trees ache for death. A crow circles overhead, making ominous creaking noises. Everyone straggles into a lumpy circle near the gates. A guy in a camouflage paintball shootout coveralls poses like an army sergeant beside Joshua. They both have the same tall, muscled, marine body types. Maybe Joshua spends his every spare moment here. They're brothers in arms, comrades who've seen some seriously painty shit go down in this barren wasteland. When they both stare expectantly at me, I realize I'm supposed to be standing up front, too. Joshua demonstrates how to put the suit and protective gear on, and everyone watches with keen interest. Sergeant Paintball fields the slew of stupid questions with practiced patience. We all receive our suits, helmets, knee pads. Then we're armed. We are adults, undertaking a team-building activity in a professional capacity, so naturally we spend several minutes horsing around, striking poses with our paintball guns and making sound effects. Joshua and Sergeant Paintball watch us like orderlies at a mental facility. Alan, recent birthday boy, pretends to mow us all down. Pew, 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 he intones in his grave baritone. Pew, pew. I scramble out of the path of one fake skirmish and start to feel undersized and feeble. I look at all the long legs and eyes lit with paint lust. Maybe tensions will boil over. They'll all go rogue. Gammons versus Bexleys, swapping paintball guns for AK-47s. Sweat is starting to bead on my brow and upper lip, and whatever is going on with my stomach, it's bad. My lipstick is a faded pink popsicle stain, and my hair is stuffed into a heavy helmet. The smallest suit they had is still so big that people laugh when they see me. Such elegance. Such grace. I'm going to need to concentrate really hard on getting through this afternoon. Elaine waves to me. She is standing on an observation deck, wearing a white visor, cream linen shirt, and white cigarette pants, sipping Diet Coke through a straw. Only Elaine would wear white to a paintball park. Mr. Bexley is sulking about something and remains seated, arms crossed, a bullfrog in khaki. Have fun, everyone, Elaine calls, and remember, we can see you. With that eerie Big Brother comment ringing in our ears, we begin. Joshua reads out the first teams, and I'm on his. We stride out with our teammates, Andy and Annabelle. Two Gammons, two Bexleys. Our opposing team files out, a similar ratio. He must have sorted each team like this. I should have opened my mouth this last week to ask him about the arrangements, but the awkwardness between us has been insurmountable. Plus, since my corporate retreat idea was completely destroyed, I felt lackluster and sulky about everything. He hijacked it. He can damn well organize it. But as I realize the air is filled with palpable excitement, I realize my grand idea has now become his achievement. I'm such an idiot. I spot Marion with the flag. She waves merrily with a pen gripped between her teeth, clipboard in hand, and binoculars hanging on her chest. She is taking her faux important job seriously. What's the plan, team? I can't see our opposition. Stick together or spread out? Annabelle is unsure. I'd say probably stick together, given this is a team-building challenge. I prop myself up on some slender pine branches and wish I could wipe my face. In this suit, I'm so hot I feel faint. We should pick one person who'll be going for the flag and protect them, Andy says, which is a good idea. I like it. Who's going to do it? They both peep furtively at Joshua, clearly fearful of him. Somehow the helmet doesn't look stupid on him. His gloved hand looks big enough to punch through a brick wall. He should be miniaturized and sold in toy stores for violent little boys. Annabelle, Joshua decides, and if she gets shot, we'll go for the flag in alphabetical order. First names. Great. Meaning Andy, Joshua, and then Lucy. Basically, no one is protecting me at all. I'm cannon fodder. We file out and take cover. Andy sees my rising panic and smiles kindly. We'll all look after you, Luce. Don't worry. I knew somehow Joshua would find a way to screw with me. I am coming out of this bruised, battered, and paint-splattered. And I can't even shoot him until I'm rotated onto another team. There's a horn blast, and I'm crawling on hands and knees up an incline awkwardly, the loose dirt making me slide. I am moving first. It makes sense, given our strategy. I'll scout the way forward. I'm the most expendable. My arms won't seem to hold me up properly, and I collapse onto my stomach. Annabelle runs ahead of me with windmill limbs and zero strategy or stealth. I kneel up and try to call her back. A hand clamps on my calf and I'm dragged backward until Joshua flops down next to me, gun in hand. He motions at me to lie down. Don't! I hiss at him. You'll get shot in the face if you pop up like that. Why didn't you let me then? His hand spreads across my lower back, pinning me firmly to the ground. In the privacy of my mind, I can admit the weight of his hand is delicious. The slivers of fabric between our skin begins to glow. What's wrong with you anyway? Nothing's wrong. I try to squirm away. You look terrible. Thanks. We have to cover Annabelle. I edge up to see her tottering awkwardly among slender tree trunks, completely exposed. Andy is gallantly leaping after her. The flag is an orange scrap in the distance. I'm up and running, Joshua behind me. I fall behind a boulder and spot Marnie on the opposing team. Raising my gun, I fire off a couple of rounds, clipping her in the shoulder. She says a disappointed, "Aw," and walks off. When I look at Joshua, he looks mildly impressed. Badass. Annabelle is out of sight. The air is filled with cracks, pops, and cries of pain. After a few short runs, I find Andy kneeling on the ground trying to tie his bootlace with a big splat of paint on his chest. Oh, Andy. He looks up at me with the weary eyes of a Vietnam vet who knows he's about to die, blood geysering from a pulpy stomach wound. He grasps at my knee. Go save her. He has been watching too many action movies, but so have I, judging by the swell of responsibility and protectiveness inside me. I will save Annabelle. I'm going to get a Coke, Andy tells me, ruining the moment. I keep running. My breath feels short, and I'm fogging my goggles a little. I hear a crack and jump behind a pyramid of barrels which drum with the sound of shots. I look down. Nothing on me so far. I assume I'd feel it. I check the backs of my legs. You're clear, Joshua calls. I look over at him, crouched nearby behind a big tree stump. He's holding his paintball gun in a cool way, pointed straight at the sky. I try to copy him and begin to drop it. Dork, he comments unnecessarily. He must have strong wrists. Shut up. Annabelle is crouched behind a miserable, suicidal sapling. I watch her raise her gun and take out Matt from the opposition. I let out a yelp of delight, and she turns and gives me the thumbs up, grinning wildly as she waves me forward. The flag is fluttering about 30 yards away. She is abruptly shot in the center of her back and yips in pain. I don't need to even look at Joshua to know that he is shaking his head at me. Off you go, then. I'll protect you. Just you and me now, buddy. Age before beauty. Great. I'm a dead man. He makes the short run to my barrel hideout and checks his ammo, glancing over his shoulder. Were your parents in the military? It would explain a lot. The rigid behaviors, the brisk, impersonal manner. Addiction to rules and sequences. His neatness and economy in everything he does. He's now got a lack of friends and the inability to connect. I bet his parents had frequent foreign postings. He bounces a quarter off his perfectly made bed. No, he tells me, checking my gun for me. They're doctors. Surgeons. Well, they were. Are they dead? You're an orphan? Am I what? They're retired. Alive and well. Huh. Are you from here? The tip of my gun is resting in the dirt. I'm too tired. I hope I get shot. I need a rest. Only me and my brother live in the city. He frowns at me and taps my gun with his. Hold your gun up. There's two of you? Heaven help us. I try to obey, but my arms are watery. You'll be pleased to know we're nothing alike. Do you see him much? No. He assesses the course in front of us. Why not? None of your business. Sheesh. I can see Danny in the distance, stalking through the trees in the skirmish happening on the next rotation over, a dividing rope between us. I give him a wave and he lifts a hand in response, a smile spreading. Joshua raises his gun and shoots him twice on the back of the thigh with sharpshooter accuracy, then sniffs derisively. What gives? I'm not against you! Danny shouts. He calls out to his flag marshal and resumes, this time with a slight limp. That was unnecessary, Joshua. Very bad sportsmanship. We begin to move forward, and he's bent low at the waist, surprisingly light on his feet as he sidesteps a volley of shots, bumping me backward behind a tree. The flag is dangling close by, but there are still two of our opponents out there. Quiet! We hiss to each other in unison and look at each other. The worst place to play the staring game is in the middle of a live paintball session. I have to lean my helmet back against the tree to look up at him properly. His eyes are a color I've never seen. The thrill of live-action combat electrifies him. He looks away to check behind us, a scowl darkening his face. How do I ever manage to keep my composure under those fierce eyes? We're pressed together. My skin instantly sensitizes, and when I glance sideways, I get a peripheral glimpse of his curved, heavy bicep. My heart stutters when I remember how it felt to have his hand on my jaw, cradling it, tilting me up to meet his mouth, tasting me like something sweet. He is looking at my mouth, and I know he is remembering the exact same thing. Chapter 9. You're sweating. Joshua frowns. Maybe not then. I can hear a twig crack and realize someone is approaching behind us. I raise my eyebrows in askance and Joshua nods. My moment is here and he needs to get the flag. I grab handfuls of his paintball suit and swing him around behind me against the tree. What are you? He starts to say behind my back, but I'm scanning the terrain for the ambush. I'm Lara Croft, raising her guns, eyes burning with retribution. I can see the shape of the enemy's elbow behind the barrels. Go! I yell. I fumble in my thick gloves for the trigger. I'm covering you! It happens instantly. Pop, pop, pop. Pain radiates through me. Arms, legs, stomach, boob. I howl, but the shots keep coming, white splats all over me. It's complete overkill. Joshua pivots us neatly and blocks the shots with his body. I feel him jolting as he takes more hits and his arm rises to cradle my head. Can I freeze time and take a nap right here? He turns his head and shouts angrily at our assailant. The shots stop, and nearby I hear Simon crow with triumph, standing on top of the mound and waving the flag. Damn it. My one job, and he wouldn't even let me do it. You should have gone. I was covering for you. Now we've lost. Another wave of nausea nearly knocks me over. Sorry, Joshua says sarcastically. Rob is approaching, gun lowered. I'm making whimpering noises. The pain is throbbing in points all over me. Sorry, Lucy. I'm so sorry. I got a bit excited. I play a lot of computer games. Rob takes a few steps back when he sees Joshua's expression. You really hurt her. Joshua snaps at him, and I feel his hand cut my head. He's still pressing me against the tree, knee braced between mine, and when I look to my left, I see Marion watching us with her binoculars. She drops them and writes something on her clipboard, a grin curling her mouth. Off! I give him an almighty shove. His body is huge and heavy, and I'm so boiling I want to rip my suit off and lie in cold paint. We're all panting a little as we walk back to the starting point under the balcony. I'm limping, and Joshua takes my arm brusquely, probably to move me on faster. I see Elaine up ahead, lowering her sunglasses. I wave like a sad cartoon kitten. Womp womp. Casualties abound. People groan as they press the painted parts of their bodies gingerly. Dozens of reenactments are taking place. I look down and realize my front is almost solid paint. Joshua's front half is fine, but his back is a mess. Trust us to be opposites. When I strip off my gloves and helmet, Joshua gives me his clipboard and a bottle of water. I raise it to my lips, and it seems to be empty quickly. Everything feels weird. Joshua asks Sergeant Paintball if they have any aspirin. Danny picks his way through our fallen comrades to join me. I'm acutely aware of how disgusting I must look. He looks at my front. Ouch. I'm seriously one big bruise. Do I need to avenge you? Sure, that'd be great. Rob from corporate is the definition of trigger happy. Consider him taken care of. And what was that, Josh? You shot me in the leg and I was in a completely different game. Sorry, I got confused, Joshua says, insincerity ringing in his tone. Danny shades his eyes and Joshua smirks up at the sky. Our colleagues stumble and flail, paint slicked and in pain, unsure of what to do next. Things are rapidly starting to disintegrate. I consult the clipboard. I see he's written me on his team for every rotation, probably at Elaine's request. She'd never know. She's doing a Sudoku puzzle. I quickly use a pencil and change it before calling out the next teams. People clump together, complaining. Wait, they're getting the first aid kit. You'd better sit the rest of the afternoon out. Something's wrong with you, Joshua says. I glance up at Elaine again, and then look at everyone around me. I could be in charge of this bunch soon. This afternoon is an audition, no doubt about it. I'm not going to fail now. Yeah, you've been telling me since the day we met. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. I walk off without a backward glance into my new team. It feels like the longest afternoon of my life, but it also goes by in a flash. The feeling of being stalked and watched is unnerving, and in our small teams we do form instant bonds. I shove Quintus from accounts receivable into a bunker as pink pellets rain down over us. Go! Go! I roar like a SWAT team leader as Bridget goose-steps through to the flag, bursts of paint clipping at her heels. The extent of how sick I am reveals itself during my third rotation, after I snatch the flag. I knew it was deeply tragic of me to feel so triumphant, but honestly, I felt as though I'd scaled Everest. My teammates screamed, and big basketball player Samantha, a Bexley, picked me up off the ground and swung me in a circle. I threw up a little in my mouth. My arms shake from the strain of holding the gun. Everything feels slightly surreal, as if at any moment I'll awake from a bad afternoon nap. The sky overhead is a silver-white dome. I look at the faces surrounding me, shining with sweat. I feel such a kinship with these people. I watch a Gammon high-five a Bexley as they burst out laughing. We're all in it together. Maybe Joshua had a good idea with this after all. Maybe the only way to truly unite people is through battle and pain, confrontation and competition. Maybe surviving something is the point. Where is Joshua anyway? I don't see him for the rest of the afternoon except for the team rotation breaks. With every person stalking through the trees, my eyes would play tricks. I'd see him kneeling down, reloading and taking shots. I'd see the shape of his shoulders and the curve of his spine. But then I'd blink and it would be someone else. I'm expecting that one fatal shot. A big red splat, straight to the heart. Where's Joshua? I ask the flag marshals and they shrug. Where's Joshua? I ask everyone I pass. Where's Joshua? The answers start to get clipped and irritated. I tug at my paintball suit, despite the rhythmic pops and cracks of live fire. I pull down the neckband ineffectually, baring half an inch of sweaty skin to the cold air. Then I throw up. It's nothing but water and tea. I didn't feel like lunch today. Or breakfast. I kick sand over it and wipe my mouth on the back of my hand. The planet is circling too quickly, so I hold on to a tree. The air is beginning to chill as the final horn sounds, and we all trudge back to HQ. Everyone is visibly exhausted, and there is a great deal of fuss as we strip out of our suits. Everybody is complaining. Sergeant Paintball looks like he's evaluating his life choices. Joshua is standing with one hand on his hip, and I instinctively raise my gun. It's time. Lucy versus Joshua. Total annihilation. He walks over to me, completely unperturbed by my action man pose, and takes the gun. I pull my helmet off. He steps behind me and his fingers slide in the sweat on the nape of my neck. It's like he's touched a live wire and I make a weird gurgle. He grips the zipper of my suit and slashes it down my back. I hop around to get it off, batting away his hands. You're sick, he accuses. I shrug noncommittally and weave up the stairs to where Elaine and Fat Little Dick wait. Looks like some excellent teamwork went on, Elaine says. We let out a weak cheer, propping each other up. I lift the edge of my t-shirt. My bruises are purple. The smell of coffee makes me feel ill. I make my way to the front. Joshua's been running this little show for too long. I can salvage this. Can I call our four flag marshals to stand and discuss the acts of teamwork and bravery they witnessed? The flag marshals make their observations, and I try to hold it together. Apparently, Susie caused a commotion, allowing her teammate to slip up and get the flag. I got four shots for that, Susie calls, patting her hip and wincing. But you took the shots for your team, Mr. Bexley says, rousing himself out of his stupor, which I am beginning to suspect is caused by prescription drugs. Good work, young lady. And speaking of bravery, Marion says, and my stomach sinks. Little Lucy here did something quite remarkable. A cheer goes up and I wave it away. If one more person calls me little, small, or ridiculously small, I'm going to karate chop them. She took at least 10 rounds for a colleague today, protecting him from someone who was going a little overboard. That person remains nameless. She looks pointedly at Rob, and he cowers lower to the ground like a guilty dog. Other people frown at him. She's standing in front of her colleague, arms outstretched, protecting him to the death. Marion mimes my actions, arms scarecrow straight, body jolting from the shots. She's a good actress. And to my surprise, I see it's none other than Josh Templeman that Lucy is protecting. A big laugh breaks out. People swap amused looks, and two girls from HR elbow each other. But then, he swings her around to protect her and takes paintballs in the back. Protecting her. It was quite something. Another fun fact. Marion reads romance novels in the kitchen at lunchtime. I catch Joshua's eye, and he wipes his forehead roughly on his forearm. It seems paintball has brought us all together today, I manage to say, and everyone claps. If this were a TV episode, we've just reached the little moral conclusion. Stop hating each other. Elaine is pleased. Her lips are pursed in a knowing smile. The day-off prize is awarded to Susie, and she accepts her little mock certificate with a deep bow. Deborah has taken some good action shots on her camera, and I ask her to email them to me for the staff newsletter. Elaine catches me by the elbow. Remember, I'm not in on Monday. I'll be meditating under a tree. Everyone heads down to the bus, and I'm gratified to see it's now harder to tell who's Gammon and who's Bexley. Everyone looks like a train wreck. Bedraggled clothes and red, sweaty brows. Most of the women have panda-eye makeup. Despite the physical discomfort, there's a new sense of camaraderie. Elaine and Mr. Bexley peel out again like wacky racers. A few people are being picked up by spouses, and there's a confusing swirl of cars and dust. The bus driver puts down her newspaper at our approach and unlocks the door. Please hold on for a few minutes, I tell her, and jog back inside. I make it to the bathroom and am violently sick. Before I can feel like it's completely out of my system, there's a sharp rap on the bathroom door. There's only one person I know who could knock so impatiently and put so much irritation into it. Go away, I tell him. It's Joshua. I know, I flush again. You're sick. I told you. He jiggles the doorknob lightly. I'll get home by myself. Go away. There's a silence, and I figure he's gone back to the bus. I throw up again. Flush again. I wash my hands, leaning my legs against the sink until the splashback soaks into my jeans. Elvis clings to me damply. I'm sick, I confide to my reflection. I'm fevered, eyes glittering. I'm blue and gray and white. The door is creaked open, and I squawk in fright. Holy shit. Joshua's eyebrows pinch together. You look bad. I can barely focus my eyes. The floor is spinning. I can't make it. That bus trip, I can't. I could call Elaine. She could come back. She couldn't have gotten far. No, I'll be okay. She's driving to a health retreat. I can take care of myself. He leans on the doorframe, his brow creased. I steel myself, cupping a little cold water in my hand and slosh it over the back of my neck. My hair has been unraveling from its bun and sticks to my neck. I rinse my mouth. Okay, I'm all right. As we walk back, he pinches the little joint of my elbow between two fingers like a bag of garbage. I can feel the avid eyes watching us from the tinted bus windows. I think of the two girls nudging each other and shake him loose. I could leave you here and drive back and get you, but it would take an hour at least. You? Come back and get me? I'd be here all night. Hey, don't talk like that anymore, all right? He's annoyed. Yeah, HR. I wobble up onto the bus. Oh, dear, Marion calls loudly. Lucy, you're looking awful. Lucy, Danny calls from the rear of the bus. Saved you a seat. He's so far back in the bus, it telescopes claustrophobically. If I sit back there, I will absolutely vomit on everyone. Sorry, I mouth at Danny and sit in the front seat and close my eyes. Joshua presses the back of his hand to my damp forehead, and I hiss. Your hand is cold. No, you're burning up. We need to get you to a doctor. It's almost Friday night. What are the chances of that happening? I need to go to bed. The trip home is pretty bad. I'm trapped in an endless, unmarked period of time. I'm a bug in a jar being shaken by a kid. The bus is swaying, hot, airless, and I feel every bump and curve. I focus on my breathing and the feeling of Joshua's arm pressed against mine. At one particularly sharp corner, he uses his shoulder to support me upright in my seat. "Why?" I ask, uselessly. I feel him shrug. We're unloaded in front of B&G. A few women cluster around me, and I try to understand what they're saying. Joshua is holding me by the scruff of my damp t-shirt and tells them it's fine. He has a lively debate with Danny, who keeps asking me, "Are you sure?" "Of course she's fucking sure," Joshua thunders. Then we're alone. "Did you drive?" "Jerry needs another weekend. The mechanic. I'll get a bus." He moves me forward, a heaving, sweating marionette. My mouth tastes like acid. His grip drops from my neck to loop a finger into the loop on the back of my jeans, the other on my elbow. I can feel his knuckle pressing above my butt crack, and I laugh out loud. The stairs to the basement parking lot are steep, and I balk. But he pushes me on, hands tightening. He uses his swipe card to get us in and steers me steadily toward his black car. I can smell car fumes and oil. I can smell everything. I dry retch behind a pole, and he hesitantly lays a hand between my shoulder blades. He rubs it around a little. I shudder through another volley of nausea. Joshua guides me to the passenger seat. He slings the bag I'd forgotten about into the back seat. He idles the car, and I glimpse myself in a side mirror, my head rolled to the side, a dark flush on my cheekbones, gleaming with sweat, my mascara smudged. "Now, are you going to be sick in the car, Shortcake?" He doesn't sound impatient or annoyed. He opens my window a few inches. "No. Maybe. Well, possibly." "Use this if you need to," he tells me, handing me an empty takeout coffee cup. He puts the car into reverse. "Tell me where to go, then." "Go to hell." I start laughing again. "So that's where you came from." "Shut up." "Go left." I navigate him to my apartment building. I keep my eyes closed and count my breaths and do not vomit. It is quite an achievement. "Here, out front is fine." He shakes his head, and in defeat, I direct him to my empty parking space. He has to help me climb out of the car, and I sag against him. My cheek momentarily rests on something like his chest. My hand grips something like his waist. He hits the button, and we stand at opposite sides of the elevator car, and the staring game is overlaid with hot, sweaty memories of the last time we did this together. "Your eyes were like a serial killer that day." "I must have vomited out my filter." "So were yours." "I like your t-shirt. So much. It's magnificent on you." He's mystified as he looks down at himself. "It's nothing special. I like yours, too. It's as big as a dress." The elevator doors open. I lurch out. Unfortunately, he follows. "I'm here." I lean on my door. He digs my keys from my bag and unlocks the door. I've never seen anyone so desperate to be invited inside. His head pokes in farther. His hands are hanging onto the door frame like he's about to fall in. "It's not what I expected. It's not very colorful." "Thank you, goodbye." I push into the kitchen and seize a glass. Then I drink straight from the faucet. "I think we could find an after-hours clinic," Joshua says behind me and takes the glass before I can drop it. He pushes my toaster straight against the wall, and to fill in the awkward silence, he folds a dishcloth. His fingernail picks at a crumb glued to the countertop. Oh, man. He's one of those people who love to clean. He wants to roll up his sleeves and bleach and scrub. "It's so messy, isn't it?" I point at a mug with a lipstick mark. He looks at it longingly, and we simultaneously begin to try to get past each other in the tiny space. "Let me take you to a doctor." "I need to lie down, that's all." "Is there anyone you want me to call?" "I don't need anyone," I announce proudly. I hold my hand out for my key. He holds it out of reach. I don't need anyone to look after me. I can get through this. I'm alone in this world. Alone in this world? So dramatic. I'll go to the drugstore and see what I can get you. Sure, sure. Have a nice weekend. As the door snicks shut, I reconfirm that my apartment is a bit of a disaster zone, cluttered, and yes, a little colorless. My dad calls it the igloo. I haven't had enough time yet to put my stamp on the place. I've been too busy. The Smurf cabinet takes up a large part of the living room wall, dark without the special lights switched on. Thank goodness Joshua left. My bed looks like I've been having disturbing sexual dreams, which is accurate. The sheets are all rumpled and twisted, and on the side where a man should be is strewn with books. Lingerie straps and Smurf-patterned underwear peek out of drawers like lettuce from a burger. I take the copy of Joshua's planner from my nightstand and hide it. My shower is wonderful, torturous, endless. I turn it cold and freeze. I turn it hot and burn inside my skin. I drink the spray. I goop a big pile of shampoo on the top of my head and let it rinse away. An indication I must be near death is I can't be bothered to condition. My head spins with nonsensical images, and I lean against the tiles and remember what it was like to lean against a tree with Joshua Templeman shielding me with his body. In the privacy of my mind, I can imagine whatever I want, and they aren't progressive, 21st century thoughts. They're depraved, brutal cavewoman thoughts. In my mind, he's electric with the animal instinct to protect me, his heavy muscle braced over my body. He absorbs each impact, and it is his privilege. He's injected sharp and hard with nature's superdrug, testosterone. I'm wrapped in him, safe from anything the world wants to throw at me. Anything painful or cruel will have to get through him before it has any chance of touching me. And it will never happen. Alive? I scream when I realize that resonating voice isn't in my imagination and cling to the tiles. Don't come in! I did close the door. Thank you, guardian angels. I cross my arms over all of my X-rated zones. Of course I won't, he snaps. I am completely naked. Bruises. I'm a Monet watercolor, purple water lilies floating in green. He says nothing. Well, go out, into the living room. My skin hurts when I towel myself. I crack the bathroom door open and hear silence. I scurry out and find underwear, a heinous beige bra, shorts, and an old crappy pajama top with a picture of a cute dinosaur on it, his drowsy eyes half closed. Underneath him reads, Sleepysaurus. I'm naked and putting on clothes, separated from Joshua by only a wall. I love you, wall. What a good wall. I toss myself so hard into bed, the mattress squeaks, and it's the last thing I hear. I wake up in a volcano. No, no! I'm not poisoning you. Quit squirming. Joshua's hand is behind my neck as he presses two pills onto my tongue. I swallow water, and then he lowers me flat. My mother always gave me lemonade, and she'd sit with me. Whenever I woke up, she'd still be there. Did yours? I sound like I'm 5 years old. My parents were too busy on shift, looking after other sick people to do that stuff for me. Doctors. Yep, except me. An edge in his voice denotes a sore topic. I feel his hand on my forehead, fingers light and stiff. Let's do a temperature check. I feel so fucking stupid. My voice is garbled due to the thermometer he's put into my mouth. He must have bought it, because I don't own one. I'm currently inside a moment destined to become the most cringeworthy memory of my life. You'll never let me live this down. That's what I try to say. Thanks to the thermometer, it comes out like I've got a head injury. Sure I will. Don't chew the thermometer, he replies quietly, taking it out of my mouth. We don't want you to get over 104. In the low evening light, his eyes are darkened navy as he assesses me almost clinically before smoothing his hand over my forehead again, softly, not checking my temperature. My pillow is adjusted a little. His eyes are not the man I know. Okay. Please stay for a minute. But you can leave if you want. Lucy, I'll stay. When I eventually dream, it's about Joshua sitting on the edge of my mattress, watching me sleep. Chapter 10. I'm vomiting. Joshua Templeman is holding a large Tupperware container under my face, the one I usually carry cakes to work in. I can smell the sweet plastic residue of icing and eggs. I throw up more. His wrist is holding up my limp head, my hair gathered in his fist. This is so disgusting. I groan in between heaves. I'm so... Shh, he replies, and I fall asleep, shuddering and gasping, while he wipes my face with something cold and damp. The clock says 1:08 a.m. when I sit upright again. A wet compress falls into my lap. I jerk in fright at the weight on the bed next to me. It's me, Joshua says. He's sitting against my headboard with his thumb in a Smurf Price guidebook. He's got no shoes on, and his socked feet are casually crossed at the ankles. The other books have been stacked neatly on my dresser. I'm so cold, I chatter. I put my hand into my hair. It's still damp from my shower. He shakes his head. You have a fever. It's getting worse. No, cold, I argue. I stumble into the bathroom, leaving the door ajar. I pee, flush, and then realize how unladylike I was. Oh, well. He's seen and heard almost everything now. There's nothing left to do but fake my own death and start a new life. I use my finger to rub some toothpaste on my tongue. Gag. Repeat. I hear cotton unfurling, the snap of elastic, and the creak of mattress, and through the crack in the door I watch him put fresh sheets on the bed. I'm a soggy, disgusting mess, but I still manage to watch his bent-over backside. How you doing? He looks at me under his arm and hauls the last corner of the sheet into place. My lucky mattress is being manhandled. Oh, just fine. How you doing? I fall into bed and claw the blankets up onto me. The mattress depresses heavily beside me, and his hand is on my forehead. Ah, that's nice. His hand feels like the sort of temperature I should be striving for. Everything we do is tit for tat, so I raise my hands up and put them on his forehead. Okay, he is amused. I'm touching my colleague Joshua on the face. I'm dreaming. I'll wake up on the bus with him sneering at the trail of drool on my chin. But a minute ticks by, and I don't. I slide my hands down, over sandpaper grit on his jaw, remembering how he cradled my face in the elevator. No one has ever held me like that. I open my eyes, and I could swear he shivers. I touch his pulse. It touches me back. I have my hands on his throat now, and I remember how badly I wanted to strangle him once. I spread my hands lightly around his neck, just to check the fit, and he narrows one eye. Go ahead, he tells me. Do it. His throat is way too big for my tiny hands. I feel a tension shimmering through him, a tightening in his body. There's a sound in his throat. I'm hurting him. Maybe I'm strangling him to death right now. Color is sweeping up his neck. When he pins me with his eyes, I know something's coming. I am not prepared when it happens. The world explodes apart as he begins to laugh. He's the same person I stare at every weekday, but lit up. He's plugged into the mains and electric. Humor and light radiate from him, making his colors glow like stained glass. Brown, gold, blue, white. It's a crime I've never seen these smile lines before. His mouth is in an easy curve, perfect teeth and a faint dimple bracketing each corner. Each laugh gusts from him in a husky, breathless rush, something he can no longer hold in, and it's as addictive to me as the taste of his mouth or the smell of his skin. His amazing laugh is something I need now. If I'd ever thought he was good-looking before, in passing or noticed an irritation, I never knew the full story. When Josh smiles, he is blinding. My heart is pounding, and I frantically catalog this moment in the half-light. It's the only one I'll get while delirious with fever. If only I could hold on to this moment. I already feel the sadness that will hollow me out when it ends. I want to tell him, don't leave yet. My fingers must be flexing because he laughs until the mattress is shaking beneath us. A diamond wet sparkle of light in the corner of his eye is a bullet to my heart. I'll be able to replay this beautiful, impossible moment in my memory when I'm 100 years old. Go ahead. Kill me, shortcake. He gasps, wiping his eye with his hand. You know you want to. So bad, I tell him, like he once told me. I've got a tightening in my own throat, and I can barely get the words out. So bad, you have no idea. My pajamas are soaked with sweat when I jolt awake, and there is a third person in my bedroom. A man I've never seen before. I begin screaming like an injured monkey. Calm down, Josh says into my ear. I scramble into his lap and press my face into his collarbone, huffing his cedar scent so hard, I probably suck out his ghost. I'm about to be taken to a scary medical facility, away from the safety of my bed and these arms. Don't let them, Josh. I'll get better. I'm a doctor, Lucy. How long and what symptoms? The man puts on some gloves. She wasn't 100% this morning. High color, distracted, and she got worse throughout the day. Visibly sweaty since lunchtime, and she didn't eat. Vomiting at 5 p.m. And then? The doctor continues to select things from his case, lining them on the end of my bed. I watch suspiciously. Delirious by 8. Trying to strangle me with her bare hands by 1:30, burning up closer to 104, and now she's 105.6. I squeeze my eyes shut when the unfamiliar rubber hands feel the glands in my throat. Josh rubs my arms soothingly. I'm sitting between his thighs now, feeling his solid weight behind my shoulder blades. My own human armchair. The doctor presses his fingertips into my abdomen, and I make crying sounds. My top is peeled up a few inches. What in the hell happened here? They both simultaneously let out a sympathetic hiss of breath. We had a paintball day at work. Even my back isn't as bad as this. Josh's fingers stroke the skin, and I sweat even more. Poor shortcake, he says in my ear. There's no sarcasm. Have you eaten out at any restaurants? I rack my brains. Thai takeout for dinner? Not today. Yesterday, maybe. When the man frowns, it's so familiar. Food poisoning is a possibility. Could be a virus, Josh argues. The time frame is a little long. If you're so capable of diagnosing her, why even call me? They begin bickering about my symptoms. To my ears, they sound like guys talking about sports, and the city's current viruses are the teams. I watch them through slitted eyes. I didn't even know doctors would do house calls, especially at 2:39 in the morning. He's mid-30s, tall, dark-haired, blue-eyed. He's clearly thrown a jacket over his pajamas. You're good-looking, I tell the doctor. My lost filter should be a secondary diagnosis. Wow, she must really be delirious, Josh says acridly, wrapping his arm across my collarbones. The squeeze renders me immobile. Funny, he's usually called the good-looking one. The doctor says it wryly as he searches in a kit bag at the foot of the bed. Oh, calm down, Josh. You're his brother, I say in childlike wonder when the rusted cogs in my brain clunk into place. I thought he was an experiment gone wrong. They look at each other, and Josh's brother laughs. She's so cute. I feel Josh shake his head. He adjusts me a little against his chest, and my fevered brain interprets it as a snuggle. I'm pathetic. He tells me constantly, "What's your name?" "I'm Patrick." Patrick Templeman. Holy shit! You're the actual Dr. Templeman! I'm still sitting in Josh's lap, my head in the curve of his neck, probably covering him in sweat. I try to struggle off, but I'm held tight. I am indeed Dr. Templeman. One of them, anyway. The amusement fades from his face and he coughs and begins to turn away. I catch his sleeve to try to see how much of Josh is in his features. He stills obediently, but his eyes flick to Josh, who is tense as a brick wall behind me. Sorry, yes, Josh is better looking. There's a pause before both brothers laugh. Patrick isn't remotely offended, and Josh's arm relaxes. Can you tell me embarrassing things about him? When you're feeling better, you bet. Keep her fluids up, Josh. She's small enough that she'll dehydrate. I know. Together, they coax me to swallow a sour medicine. I am laid flat against the bed, and the two leave the room, shutting the door, but their voices still reach me. You would have been good at this, Patrick says, rattling in his medical kit. You've done all the right things for her. Josh sighs heavily. I'm sure he's just crossed his arms. Don't get defensive. So, next hard topic. Were you going to give me an RSVP? Ever? I was going to. He's lying. Well, you can give me one now. And don't pretend you don't know the date. I know for a fact Mom gave you the invite in person. We didn't want it to go missing like the engagement party invite. Josh, you little weasel. Patrick is thinking the same thing. RSVP right now. Mindy needs to know. For such minor details as catering, seating. I'm busy at the moment. Josh tries, but Patrick cuts him off. Imagine how it'll look if you don't turn up. Josh says nothing, and Patrick perseveres. I know it's going to be hard. You expect me to walk in there like nothing happened? Patrick is confused. But you'd bring Lucy, wouldn't you? I ponder this in the dark. Why on earth would it be hard for Joshua to attend his own brother's wedding? She's not my girlfriend. We work together. Josh sounds irritated. I wish that didn't give me such a punch in the gut, but it does. You could have fooled me. Yeah, well, she's more on the market for a nice guy. Aren't they all? There's a loaded silence. How many more times do I have to say, no more times? Josh is the king of shutting down a conversation. There's more silence. I can almost hear them both looking at my bedroom door. Patrick's voice is lowered now, and I can't hear anything except huffy arguing. Hating myself desperately, I climb silently out of bed, careful to keep my feet in the shadows. I'm a disgusting little snoop. I'm asking you to come to my wedding and make your mother happy. Make me happy. Mindy is stressed as hell thinking there's some sort of family feud happening. Josh sighs, heavy and defeated. Fine. So that's a yes? Yes, please, Patrick. I'd love to come to your wedding. I accept your gracious invitation. Yes, that. I'll mark you down with a plus one. If she survives the night. I grip the wall in horror until I hear Josh say sarcastically, "Ha ha." It's now some time before dawn, and my room is ice blue. I'm propped into a sitting position, gulping messily what I realize is lemonade. Did he go to the convenience store across the road? The sweet-sour taste of childhood nostalgia and homesickness makes me almost choke. He takes the glass and eases me back down against the pillows with his arm behind my shoulders. His touch was uncertain yesterday, but now he smooths his palms and fingertips across me with no hesitation. He looks wrecked with tiredness. Josh. His eyes flicker with surprise. Lucy. Lucinda, I whisper archly. He turns away to smile, but I catch his sleeve. Don't. I've already seen it. I'm never getting over his smile. Okay. I can tell he's confused. He's not the only one. I've been staring at Joshua for so long, he's become a color spectrum unto himself. He's my days of the week, the squares on my calendar. White, off-white stripes, cream, non-gender-specific yellow, disgusting mustard, baby blue, robin's egg, dove gray, navy, black. I tick them off on my fingers. Josh is alarmed. You're still delirious. Nope. Those are the shirt colors you have. Hugo Boss. Haven't you ever been to Target? What the hell is the difference between white and off-white? Ecru? Eggshell? They're different. There was one single time you surprised me. And when was that? He asks the question as indulgently as a babysitter. I kick my heel in temper against the mattress. Why aren't I draped in a black negligee at least? I have never been this unattractive. I'm wearing Sleeposaurus. I look down. I'm wearing a red tank top. Holy shit. He changed me. The elevator. I blurt. I want to reroute this moment, back to a time I was halfway attractive. You surprised me then. He looks at me carefully. What did you think? I thought you were trying to hurt me. Oh, great. He sits back, embarrassed. Clearly my technique is a little rusty. I snatch his sleeve with superhuman strength and sit up a little. But then I realized what you were doing. Kissing. Of course. I haven't kissed in ages. He frowns. Oh, really? He stares down at me. I elaborate so forcefully my voice shakes. It was hot. I never heard from HR or the cops, so... He trails off, looking at my lips. I'm twisting my hands into his t-shirt. It stretches around my fists. It's so soft I want to wrap my entire body in it. Is my bed everything you imagined? I wasn't expecting so many books. And it's a little bigger than I pictured. What about my apartment? It's a tiny little pigsty. He's not being mean about it. It's true. Do you think Mr. Bexley and Elaine make out in the elevator? As long as he keeps answering my questions, I'll keep asking them. Guaranteed. I'm sure they have vicious hate sex after each quarterly review. His eyes are tipping into black, and he unravels his t-shirt from my hands as I catch a glimpse of half an inch of stomach. Hard. And hair. Now I'm sweating more. I bet when you shower, water pools right up here. I put my finger into his collarbone. I'm thirsty. I'll dehydrate. He lets out a breath and it blows right through me. Let's be just like them when we grow up, Josh. We could start a new game. Imagine, we could play games forever. Let's talk about it when you're not crazy with fever. Yeah, right. When I'm not sick, you'll hate me again. But for now, we're good. I take his hand and put it on my forehead to hide my sudden despair. I won't, he tells me. He smooths his hand away, over my hair. You hate me so much, and I can't take it much longer. I'm pathetic. I hear it in my voice. Shortcake. Stop calling me shortcake. I try to roll onto my side, but he presses the heels of his palms lightly against my shoulders. I stop breathing. Watching you pretend to hate that nickname is the best part of my day. When I don't reply, he almost smiles and releases me. It's time to tell me about the strawberry farm. It's a sore point, and it's also not the first time he's asked. I might be about to give him fodder to tease me with for a long time. Why? I've always wanted to know. Tell me everything about strawberries. His soft, cajoling whisper will be the death of me. In my mind, I'm almost back there, under the big canvas umbrella with the torn corner, talking to tourists while their kids run on ahead, buckets clanking.